Hello, Scott here, jumping in real quick to say thank you for listening, and also to let you know that we are starting crowdfunding for the remaining episodes of Season 3. More details to come after the credits, so stick around.
You are listening to a Gravestone Production Podcast.
Welcome to our solar system. The year is 2373 Standard Earth Time. Humanity has colonized the planets and brought with them the omnipresent artificial intelligence known as Kestrel. Today, we dive deeper into Kestrel's memory banks to explore the worlds through her ears. Let us continue our journey now.
It is day 26 of the 30. We had to explore and document the comet before it left our solar system. Under normal mission situations, we would be leaving probably in the next day or two. Instead, I am stuck on this rock due to never making home. This is audio log number 11, I think, and I am Dr. Rylan Colding, the last surviving member of the failed Operation Ghost Touch. It's funny, my therapist had actually suggested that I keep these audio logs on my expeditions when I was back in grad school. I have spent a fair amount of time on solo expeditions in my doctorate research. I initially started keeping these as a means of helping maintain sanity. I guess that's some of the struggle of not having a decent amount of funding for my research. Just lots of solo research. I think that is one of the reasons I was glad for the company on this one. I've only done a few solo expeditions since I got my doctorate, and that was always a bit of a bummer, but the few that I've done that have been small and mid-sized research teams, they've been a blast. We've studied the Titans of Venus in an attempt to learn a little more about just how they function, just things like that, some of the most dangerous creatures in the inner half of the solar system. And didn't lose anyone. We arrived here with three people, me, Kennedy, and Sennett. We lost Kennedy to an alien toxin because they pissed off a clearly venomous creature. I tried so hard to analyze and to figure out what the toxin was doing, how it worked. I'd never seen anything like it before. And without access to any framework, I couldn't do the research to save them. We should have just left when they got sick. And then a few days later, when the storm hit, Sunny got stabbed with that icicle. 3 feet to the left and it would have been me. I hit the ground and they were gone before the storm finished. So, what is the big problem of being on this planet, I guess, without a warp drive and without a working Irwin communicator? When you're stuck almost on the edge of the solar system, you may be asking yourself that. Well, I can't get a message to home in any reasonable amount of time, nor can I use our warp drive to get home. If we attempt the journey with regular thrusters, it will take so long to reach home. We will be a ghost ship by the time we are intercepted by anyone hundreds of years in the future. I can't radio for help either, because radio waves are dispersed by the surrounding radiation of other comets and stellar bodies and everything. The odds of the distress beacon I sent several days ago actually reaching anyone is minuscule. I mean, it has to travel a couple thousand astronomical units. It's just too far for it to be effective. The worst part of it really is that the icicles from the storm pierced the fuel cells of the warp drives, which means we have no fuel in them, and while I can use spare metal and parts from our basic repair kit, it turns out nobody expects the central fuel cells to get hit, and so we didn't bring any spare warp fuel. Even if I do patch the warp drives, I can't use them unless I can craft fuel, which requires, I think, some technomancy metals. I mean, if I had sent it, I could just ask them, but they're not here. Not in the way I need them to be. We made such incredible discoveries. We cataloged 18 different species, and there's probably more we missed. We discovered non-carbon-based life forms and can't even share it with the solar system. Instead, I have to sit here and die on this rock, hurtling through space until I starve to death. I can't even try and eat any of the native creatures. My natural body temperature is too high. Anything I try and eat would burn away in my stomach if I didn't already burn up getting there. And we discovered sentient life, too. They created intricate murals inside caves. There's a whole society that lives in a series of caverns in the mountains. Intelligent life that wasn't Vanarok or Sogwin or Kujat or Ephiriri. Like, someone knew. And they erected strange obelisks at the edge of the cross-section of the planet. It's like it was some sort of religion with the mystic symbols and all, and... Wait. The obelisks contain veins of boreal, and that's a technomancy metal. What? What is boreal used for again? Hold on. Boreal is the main ingredient in warp fuel. Sorry. This is Ryland. I don't even know what number audio log this is. I went through Senate's books for something like 2 days. A long time reading about technomantic engineering before I finally found it, though. Boreal is the main ingredient in warp fuel, and it's naturally occurring in the obelisks created by the extinct inhabitants. Warp fuel is a combination of boreal, which is used to activate some properties in a molten dolerite mixture to produce thrust to enter and travel through the subdimensional plane we call the warp. Dolerite and basalt have basically the same material makeup, but for a structural difference. So much so that early Vanarok experiments discovered that basalt has incredibly detrimental results in warp creation, but it still creates a warp dimension entry nonetheless. The obelisks were constructed with basalt with naturally occurring boreal veins, and covered with mystic symbols. That, combined with a sheer, perfectly flat cross-section of the planet's crust, and a misshapen molten metal core with a volcanic glass structure between them, the inhabitants of this planet attempted to move the entire planet with a rudimentary warp travel, but they used the wrong materials. Holy shit. I just remembered, too. When we were in the civilization, there was the mural that depicted what looking to be officials of some sort pointing at the stars. One large star and one smaller star. Their system was dying, and they attempted to move the planet to a new system, but they had the wrong materials. They were doomed either way. If I can't find Dolerite, I'm going to be doomed here as well. No. I can't think like that. I'm going to make it home. I need to make it home. I need to head to the cross-section and find Dolerite. If there's basalt on this planet, then there's Dolerite. If I can find Dolerite and I can extract the boreal from the obelisks, I can fuel the warp drives and give myself at least a chance to make it back. Come on, Ryland. You have a ship, and you have 2 days. Come on! Let's find ourselves some Dolerite. Okay, I paused, but I'm back now. I am currently over the cross-section and employed the scanners a few minutes ago. What we're doing is just waiting for a ping of a correctly identified material. Come on. Please. I know it's here. There it is! Okay, we got ourselves some Dolerite. I'm touching the trailblazer down next to the deposit. She's equipped with a core driller, which I can use to extract chunks of Dolerite. I have to synthesize the dolerite with the boral, which I can do in theory by the end of today, and then tomorrow I can get off this rock. I'll be cutting it close because I have to leave tomorrow, but I'm gonna get home. Things are looking up. I'll check in again in a little bit. Okay, part three of this audio log, I guess. Good news and bad news. First is the good news. We have successfully gathered all the dolerite within easy access on the core. This leaves me with the bad news, which is there's only enough dolerite for the proper ratio to boral from the obelisks that I can only power one of these massive warp engines for the entire journey. Which means I either don't get home and starve to death, or I risk it all and power the second engine with basalt. It would mean making the risk that I can semi-predict or control the disaster of using basalt to some degree that I can survive, and use the basalt engine as a propellant to get the speed I need, and I can use the remaining engine to maintain motion and power exit from the warp. It's a big risk. But I've got to do it. There's no other way home. With luck, this is the final audio log of Operation Ghost Touch. This is Dr. Ryland, and I will either make it home today, or I and the rest of these logs will be lost forever to space. I am currently in orbit of the Phantom Comet, or as it should be properly known, the rogue planet that attempted warp travel of an entire planet. Earlier last night, I started, and I finished this morning. I synthesized enough fuel to power a single warp drive. The second warp drive engine of the Trailblazer I filled with a mixture of basalt synthesized warp fuel. The second fuel source is structurally unstable, but I need to hope that my luck holds out and this unstable fuel system will launch me into the warp. I can use the other engine to propel me out of the warp at my destination. My biggest fear with this is that the basalt mixture will explode as it sends the ship into warp, potentially taking only half of the ship with it. Based off of the planet that we were just on and only half of it moving, I have a feeling that half of the ship will be lost. Half of it will be sent and half of it won't. So, I've isolated that whole port side half of the ship with sealed doors. Should it be torn from the ship, I will still have access to rooms and be safe from the vacuum of space. I should also add that completing this journey with me are the inhabitants of Bay 2. They are 2 Gengadoras, 4 Senate Lemurs, and 4 Zilladrix, along with a collection of beetles and fauna meant for food. Provided Bay 2 survives this journey, they will be the only remaining physical evidence of the Phantom Comet in this solar system. This is all that is at stake for this warp jump. Let's get this show on the road. Calculating warp drive navigation. Completes in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, complete. Firing warp drives. Heat levels are rising far faster in the port side warp drive. Starboard drive is about halfway there. Port side drive beginning to reach critical heat levels. Autoventilation is kicked in. Starboard engines have reached maximum RPM. Jumping in 3, 2, 1, go. Mission control. We made it. Trailblazer has taken extensive damage. The port side warp drive exploded, taking with it cargo hold number 1, Kennedy and Senate's old cabins, and the recreation cabin. Remaining intact and propelled via the starboard warp drive is the cockpit, the kitchen, my cabin containing the storage drives with all data that we collected from the Phantom Comet, the port side engine room, and cargo bay 2 containing my companions for this journey. I have enough remaining warp fuel. I am projected to forcibly exit just past Mars and the edge of CFS territory. I'm going to make it home.
It is with great joy that I can report that on July 17th, 2373, Standard Earth Time, Dr. Rylan Colding exited warp roughly 7 million miles past the orbit of Mars. The Confederacy of Free Systems battleship named the Constantinople was stationed in Martian orbit, picked up the radio frequency distress signal roughly 2 minutes after warp exit, and was on site to the Trailblazer in another 3. They found the wrecked Trailblazer floating through space at a shocking 8 million miles per hour. The Trailblazer, equipped with only a warp drive at this point, was slowed over the next 15 hours, and Dr. Ryland was successfully rescued. The tragic mission lasted 180 days exactly, and was hailed as a Pyrrhic victory in the field of exploration. Dr. Rylan Colding, Dr. Senate Deshenvaya Kaldorenthal, and Corporal Kennedy Whitmare were all awarded the prestigious Jaramir Award for scientific discovery. The Trailblazer managed to bring home a sample biome of the comet, and though the bulk of artifacts from the civilization were lost with Cargo Bay 1, there were several artifacts Dr. Ryland had smartly stored away in his cabin. True to his word, Dr. Ryland adopted Corporal Kennedy's teenage daughter, Ariel, and the two would go on to become the leading experts on the creatures captured from the Phantom Comet. Dr. Ryland never traveled on an expedition again, instead settling down for a classroom life, teaching advanced biomancy classes at his alma mater. Eventually, he retired at the age of 67. The Phantom Comet was never seen again.
The Kestrel Files Season 1, The Phantom Comet, was produced, performed, and edited by me, F. Scott Graves. Some additional sound effects were provided by the kind folks of Zapsplat.com. If you enjoyed the show, I would love it if you could leave a review on iTunes or Spotify and share it on your social media. Tell your friends about it, all of that. If you want, you can tweet at the show or tag us on Instagram. Our handle is Gravestone Crew across all manner of social media. Anything to spread the word really means the world to me. The Kestrel Files are copyright Gravestone Productions 2022. All characters presented and portrayed in this work are fiction, and any resemblances to people, real life, or otherwise are purely coincidental. Thanks for listening.
If you are hearing this segment, that means we are still in the process of crowdfunding for Season 3 of The Kestrel Files. The show has been long in the works and has had a few setbacks along the way due to major life changes on my end mostly, and we are seeking a small morsel of money to help ease the burden of producing Season 3 and, most importantly, speed up the production time. Succeeding at this means I don't have to pull out of pocket to pay our awesome actors, and that means we can produce episodes in one fell swoop, rather than the speed in which I can save money for this. The good news is that this is doable if only 135 awesome people like yourself can spare $25 to become a part of the Kestrel Files and bring this story to life, which is only a small fraction of our listening audience. Supporting means getting a bunch of access to behind-the-scenes content, bloopers, etc., and all of the crowdfunding details can be found at seedandspark.com/fund/The Kestrel Files Season 3, or just click the link in the description as well. Part of this campaign also includes re-releasing Season 1 and 2 of The Kestrel Files as longer episodes, condensing each season into about 4 episodes each, so it'll be easy to re-listen and binge the show. I greatly appreciate you for listening and will greatly, greatly appreciate you for helping keep this show going. Once again, thank you for listening.